So Pride Sunday is always the last Sunday in June. And the reason why it's the last Sunday in June is that 50 years ago, there was an uprising at the Stonewall Inn in New York, where for the first time, lesbian and gay, transgender and their allies, transgender people and their allies fought back when the police came to raid. So I have this to tell you. It was an unbearably hot, humid summer night in Greenwich Village on June 27th, 1969. The patrons at New York's Stonewall Inn were sweating it out, nursing drinks, and mourning the passing of one of their most beloved icons, Judy Garland. At about 1 a.m., a squad car of police arrived, armed with a warrant, and began roughing up patrons. 13 people were arrested, including several employees and individuals violating New York's gender-appropriate clothing statute. This was routine. Bars that were known to be havens for LGBTQ folk were raided on a regular basis, partly to punish bar owners for not paying for protection, and partly out of a sense of acting for common decency, but mostly to show queer folk that they didn't belong, even in the private clubs where they gathered, like the Stonewall Inn. These raids had happened on a weekly basis for years, but that hot, humid, muggy night, something changed. Not tonight, you don't. Judy's dead, and it's just too freaking hot. A police officer struck Storme DeLarvere on the head in front of a crowd of onlookers. She shouted to them, "Oh my God, do something!" And the crowd did. They began pushing back at first, and then throwing objects like pennies and flowers. But then as the police fought back brutally, using their billy clubs and the butts of their rifles, the Stonewall patrons and the gathering crowd began hurling bottles, rocks, and cobblestones. The police were astonished. Nowhere in the long history of LGBTQ bar raids had anyone ever fought back before. A full-scale riot broke out, a fray that would take 6 days to quell. Several AP photos show transgender folk and many people of color leading the charge, swinging purses, raising fists, and holding up signs. When the Village Voice published its account of the riots, a new wave of "Oh no you don't" arose, giving voice to thousands of LGBTQ patrons who for decades had been beaten, arrested, humiliated, and had lives destroyed for no other crime than daring to show up in public as queer. The news of the uprising spread across the country and then the world. The LGBTQA rights movement had officially begun. Some called it the shot glass heard around the world. This flashpoint event led to numerous gay rights organizations, including the Gay Liberation Front, the Human Rights Campaign, GLAAD, and PFLAG. In 2016, President Barack Obama designated the Stonewall Inn, Christopher Park, and the surrounding streets and sidewalks a national monument in recognition of the area's contribution to LGBTQ and human rights. I also want to add here that the first organizations were called gay organizations, but that quickly became amended to lesbian and gay as people began to understand that it was really the lesbians that took charge. If it wasn't for the lesbians and drag queens, we would not be here today. On June 27th of this year, as people around the world began to commemorate 50 years since the Stonewall Uprising, the New York City Police Commissioner James P. O'Neill offered an apology for the actions of the officers on that fateful night in 1969. The actions taken by the NYPD were wrong, plain and simple, he said, during an event at police headquarters. The actions and the laws were discriminatory and oppressive, and for that, I apologize. To many, this official apology seems to be a step in the right direction. Still, many have cautioned the police department that its future actions need to back up its words. We all hope this marks a step in the right direction, that the words of this police commissioner will also be heard around the world. If asked, many of us could rattle off a list of celebrities we knew who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or trans.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Ricky Martin.
Wanda Sykes.
George Takei.
Cynthia Nixon.
Laverne Cox.
Elton John.
Ellen Page. Lily Tomlin. Rachel Maddow.
Chaz Bono. Lily and Lana Wachowski. Janet Mock.
The list goes on, and it keeps on growing.
But the celebrity closet door has only recently begun to open, and very slowly at that. It still remains closed for many. Before Stonewall, even the hint that a television or film performer might be lesbian or gay ruined many a career, which is why Liberace never came out.
Seriously. An astonishingly large number of people had no idea that Liberace was gay. Many public figures, from politicians to sport figures to television and film performers, all feared alienation from their constituents or fan base.
When Ellen DeGeneres came out on her TV show in 1997, it was a groundbreaking move. Not only did her character, also named Ellen, come out, but Ellen DeGeneres did so herself. In an interview with Oprah, Ellen said, "I realized that as long as I had this secret that I worried about all the time, it made it look like something was wrong."
This was a watershed moment, not only for Ellen DeGeneres, but for television, film, and music performers everywhere. But it didn't come without a cost.
Ellen, the producers of her show, and Laura Dern, who played Ellen's girlfriend on the show, all received hate mail and death threats. The crew had to sweep for bombs before every taping on season 4. A large group of notable Christian figures wrote and signed a letter condemning Ellen of her blatant attempt to promote homosexuality. Sponsors of the show canceled their contracts. The Ellen Show was canceled within a year, and Ellen DeGeneres found herself out of work and out of favor in Hollywood.
All of this was because of two words spoken on TV.
"I'm gay."
But those two words began a sea change. A year later, NBC debuted Will and Grace.
Although Sean Hayes, just Jack, didn't come out until 2010. Seriously?
Brokeback Mountain changed the landscape again in 2005. With a sensitive portrayal of a gay man and his bisexual longtime lover.
Both played by straight men.
Winning 3 Oscars, including Best Picture, and nabbing the BAFTA Award for Best Picture.
The shows Glee and Modern Family depict unabashedly queer characters. Both shows have popular and critical acclaim, as well as receiving boatloads of awards.
If only Ellen could do another show.
Right? You mean her wildly successful, popular, and critically acclaimed show that has been running since 2003?
Oh, that.
You know, the one that's winning 16 Daytime Awards, 17 People's Choice Awards, surpassing the record held by Oprah herself.
Maybe television is ready for an out lesbian after all.
Perhaps. You can't turn on a television and not see an LGBTQA or positive character on TV these days.
Orange is the New Black.
Transparent.
American Horror Story.
Sense8.
Queer Eye.
Doctor Who.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
One Mississippi.
Star Trek Discovery.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Pose.
Grace and Frankie.
Steven Universe.
Etc.
Is that on Netflix?
The more people tell the truth about themselves, the more it creates a space for those around them to also tell the truth.
Which in turn creates a space for even more people to tell the truth about themselves.
You may not be a television star, but your story and your truth matter.
I'm Paul. I'm gay.
I'm Cindy. I'm a lesbian.
And we love Ellen.
Unitarian Universalism has a proud history of supporting full equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, and now even a broader definition than we started with. First of all, many congregations, starting in the very early 80s, embraced the Welcoming Congregation Program to increase understanding and inclusiveness and extend the work of the members beyond the congregation in supporting LGBT full equality in other ways in their greater communities. Many social justice groups, many churches and fellowships, and many UU individuals have been working for decades now across the United States to protect civil and legal rights of LGBT individuals and families on the national, state, and local level. And our movement has become widely known for supporting freedom to marry very early. Indeed, my 96-year-old colleague in Santa Monica, Ernie Pipes, was officiating at same-sex marriages or services of union beginning in the mid-60s when he was called to that church. By the late 70s, General Assembly delegates started passing resolutions so the delegates from all our churches get together, as we just did last week in Spokane, and pass resolutions, starting with affirming the inherent worth and dignity of LGBT people, encouraging congregations I think 1978, encouraging congregations to interview and settle LGBT ministers, and supporting ministers who officiated same-sex union services and later marriages, encouraging congregations if they were in Topeka and a minister did a same or a service of union, it could become very touchy in certain parts of the country, and inviting congregations to be supportive of their ministers in this political and loving act. And we also have had resolutions expanding our commitment to welcoming all people by proclaiming the rights and opportunities for people who consider themselves non-binary to enjoy the full embrace of legal and personal rights afforded to all. Finally, the UUA has had sexuality education inclusive of issues of sexual orientation and gender since 1971, and an adult curriculum of LGBTQI+ since 02. The UUA also expects all UU ministers to show ministerial competence in the area of human sexuality before being approved for ordination. It's a pretty radical legacy, one I'm very proud of, and I think you can join me in that pride.
All right, let's go to school, okay? Yeah. LGBTQA+, people of color. Ernest Owens recently wrote an article in Daily Beast, so I'm quoting a lot of the words from his article, and that's what I'm about to say. Had it not been for people of color, LGBTQA+ people would not be where they are today. This is not an exaggeration. It is simply the truth of history. The LGBTQA+ rights movement started with the Stonewall riots, and it was transgender activists Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera who that night essentially said, enough. Enough police brutality and harassment, enough raids and arrests, enough sexual favors demanded and expected by police, enough. They fought back, and their black and brown voices with their black and brown and trans bodies, and they were soon joined by the dozens of other black and brown and trans folks gathered there that night. That night, the word fierce was truly born. While many had hoped for a beautiful rainbow of racial harmony within the LGBTQA+ community, there's been an astonishing amount of racial discrimination and disparity in our own rainbow flag-waving backyard. Yes, folks, the fight for diversity and inclusion is not just happening outside of the LGBTQA+ community, but also within it. Sadly, this is nothing new. History has shown us that queer and transgender people of color have always had to remind the rest of the community of our prominence, despite the fact that the movement was co-led by us since the very beginning. We all know and love, and rightfully so, Harvey Milk. But how many of us knew about Bayard Rustin? Throughout the 1940s until his death in 1987, black and queer, Bayard Rustin was a steadfast revolutionary. He led the effort to get the historic 1963 March on Washington off the ground and advocated for equal legal protections for LGBTQ people before it was ever a thing. Co-founded by acclaimed black lesbian activist Barbara Smith, the Combahee River Collective gave a voice to black queer women at a time when they were excluded from mainstream movements. Some of the intersectional values expressed by this trailblazing group can be seen in many movements today, such as Black Lives Matter movement, where the founding leadership include black queer women. Such activism wasn't just protected in policy and direct action, but through pop culture. The legendary James Baldwin and Alice Walker weren't the only black queer writers who spoke truth to power. The 1986 anthology, In the Life, edited by black queer activist Joseph Beam, redefined how we saw ourselves as well. Fast forward a few years. Films such as the Oscar-winning film Moonlight, books such as Charles Blow's Fire Shut Up in My Bones, and the rise of black LGBTQA public figures such as Billy Porter, Lena Waithe, Roxane Gay, Janet Mock, Janelle Monáe, Laverne Cox, Sharon Cooks, Raquel Willis, Trayvell Anderson, Don Lehman, and countless activists and entertainers give me hope. But again and still, we still have a long way to go. Right now, LGBTQA progress is being threatened under the presidency of Donald Trump. We have witnessed ongoing federal setbacks to policies impacting the transgender community and those living with HIV. Hate crimes against LGBTQA people from all backgrounds are on the rise. And I can't grab my next piece of paper. There we go, sorry. The rise, those impacted the most are people of color and transgender folks. But we can do better. We need to do better. We must do better. As we move into the next 50 years, let's not continue to ignore and silence the accomplishments of black and brown LGBTQ community members. Give them a seat at the table and a mic at the podium. Pay them in equity and access, not tokenization and exploitation. It can't be a true pride celebration until we are all free. This is what Marsha P. Johnson would have wanted, as she herself once said, as long as gay people don't have their rights all across America, there's no reason for celebration.
I was alone in my straight, Catholic, conservative, racist, homophobic family. When my parents found and read letters I had hidden from a girlfriend, they threw me out of the house. I came home to my dad yelling, "No faggots here!" to all the neighbors as he tossed my belongings into the front yard. Believe it or not, that's not the worst thing that ever happened to me. Was I scared? Yeah. Unsure of what to do? Yeah. But that home never felt like home to me. So despite my fear of the unknown, I was also a bit relieved. At the time, I lived in Southern California. It was spring and the weather was good, if you have to sleep outside. I worked at McDonald's, continued to go to high school, took showers at school, slept on patio furniture in people's backyards, got up when they got up, and started my next day. After about 6 weeks, my manager noticed that I always had a backpack and walked away from work at the end of the night, often in different directions. She asked where I lived, and finally, after a good bit, I told her I'm homeless. She said her roommate was leaving in a month and I could couch surf and then take over the rent and live with her. She was also a lesbian. Not the creepy kind, just nice. We lived together for about 3 years and we're still friends today. I went to college on a partial scholarship for softball, of course. I earned my BA in psychology at a college in Los Angeles. I went to graduation ceremonies on Saturday, got in the U-Haul on Sunday, and moved to Seattle. I had worked here for a couple of summers as a camp counselor and loved the place. And the people. I've built a home here, met a woman I fell madly in love with, got married, earned a master's degree, and now I work with at-risk and disenfranchised youth, which seems fitting given my past, and I love it. I've lived here now for 30 years, and this place is truly what I call home.
Hi there, I'm David Langrock. I've been a member here at East Shore for 6.5 years. When I was around 14 or so, I had a friend named Dan. We had grown up together here on the same street, in suburban Seattle. And we were in many ways, very typical teenage boys for that time and place. Except for perhaps in at least one way, which is where my story begins today. One day Dan said to me something I will never forget. He said, "Why are we so gay?" It was the first thing we had said to each other for a while that day, and it was basically rhetorical. We didn't have much to say after. We were just pondering what it meant. Looking back now, I find several layers of meaning. The simplest was that there was a declarative that was implicit. We are gay. No doubt about that. We ticked a few boxes. But still, it was significant in that it was the first time either of us had openly articulated it to each other. Certainly, I had never said a word about it to anyone before. It was the naming of the phenomenon of our sexuality. The second meaning I took from it was that he had said, "So gay." I mean, looking back on it, I don't know that we were so gay. But I like to think Dan was marking our journey, a change from our pre-adolescent being perhaps a little gay. The third way I think about it was what Dan had sort of focused on, the word "why," as in, why are we so gay? There's something that I imagine everyone goes through at this time in their life, wondering about the why of their particular journey. And that was there, but I know Dan was also marking something much darker here. He was recognizing, I felt then and now, that we had journeyed beyond a line which would likely call into question the very why of our being. That somehow we were out of bounds. Clearly, we needed to check in. Around that time, unrelatedly, my family moved away to Texas. And a few years later, when I was 18, I fell in love youthfully and madly with a young woman I went to high school with. Again, boxes had been ticked, and I was very sure of my attraction to her, both physically and romantically. And one day, it was my turn to bring the reality of who I was to the table, much like the time before when Dan had been so bold. I said to her that while I was in no doubt of my feelings and passions for her, that I felt that she must know that I was also attracted to men. I probably said dudes or guys. At the time, I felt that this was a big risk. And actually, I think it was. She had been steeped in an even deeper culture that was openly hostile to same-sex attraction. What was she going to think about me? Now, at this point, I was going to leave the story for a little bit and move on forward, but I feel that so many people know me, and I want to explain that to this day, I'm extremely gratified and proud of myself. That day I opened up to Marcy, my partner, my wife, the love of my life. Which brings us to today and Pride. Pride is 50 years old this year, so am I. I can't take credit. It's a happy coincidence, maybe a gay coincidence. Well, a little bit. Statistically speaking, if I had to guess, there are probably many of you in here today who would identify as heterosexual. And while today the focus is not on you, I do want to say that I respect your lived truth as I demand you respect mine. If pride means anything, it's the recognition that everyone has the right to their sexual and gender identities and expressions, and above that, to be proud of that. And so I say today that I've never been heterosexual. Not even one day have I wished that I were, nor can I even conceive in a real way what that would mean. Perhaps the easiest way to understand me is as bisexual, though that doesn't really do the job completely. I'm more of what you might call pansexual, which is a strange word. So mostly I just opt for queer these days. It's a bit vague, but then perhaps so am I. Sexuality for me is multidimensional, and I suspect it is for most queer folk, and indeed, even for those who identify as heterosexual. Mostly, I wish for the world, and at the very least this congregation, is that we would reject the very idea of unidimensional sexuality. These broad classifications of bisexual, lesbian, gay, trans, queer, asexual are powerful, no doubt, in one sense. Certainly heterosexual is all too powerful. And they might continue to be useful in the way, say, vegan or vegetarian are to describe dietary habits. But just like with those terms, which barely describes our appetites in terms of the nourishment for food, so too do these other labels fall short in the language I understand to describe the many spiritual and physical dimensions of the breadth of human expression of sexuality. So go forth with pride, my siblings. Thank you.
It is my honor.